Einsteigen, aufdrehen, losfahren. Mit dem neuen Volkswagen T-Roc bist du bereit für den großen Auftritt. Selbstbewusst und voller Power. Du steigst ein? Keine Kompromisse. Nur du und der Moment. Alles passt. Dein Sound, dein Drive, dein T-Roc. Rockt. Der neue T-Roc.
Stu does America.
Follow the show on YouTube, youtube.com/StuDoesAmerica. Be sure to hit the subscribe button. Hit the bell as well for notifications on whenever we go live or whatever. Christian Toto is going to join us here in a little bit. Latest inside of the Jimmy Kimmel nonsense. I've got a couple of polls to go through that show the left might be in real trouble coming up in the 2026 midterms. Might. Hope against hope here. But we're going to start, though, by doing the left's attack on Charlie's legacy. What a weekend it was. I flew out there on Wednesday or Tuesday night, came back on Wednesday. Glenn, I know, was there. A bunch of people from basically all of conservative media were at the memorial. Charlie Kirk's 5-hour memorial combined gospel and politics. And, there were some politics there. The end speaker was President Trump. Let me give you a taste of that.
The tradition of reason and open debate that Charlie practiced is not a pillar of our democracy. In many ways, it's the basis of our entire society. It's the right and inheritance of every free American, the greatest legacy of the Enlightenment, and among the most treasured achievements of civilization. We will defend it at all costs, and we will carry forward the torch of liberty that Charlie Kirk held so proud and so high. He was so proud. And he did hold that torch high. We will never, ever let it fail. We will never let it fail. But we're going to raise it higher than ever before.
First of all, I don't disagree with the word of that. We're excited about that. And I hope that's the way we all approach this afterward. And as I'm thinking about how to kind of structure this, normally I try to, give you the most important things at the beginning, but let me start here with the least important things, if you will. And let me start with the media and the left. Democrats skipping Charlie Kirk's Arizona memorial after 58 vote against the House resolution honoring him. Democrats oppose Kirk resolution from NBC News. Some Democrats oppose the resolution honoring Charlie Kirk, condemning political violence. A lot of them will say, oh, of course they're against political violence, but he once said something on YouTube I didn't like. So I can't honor him in the fact that he just got murdered for speaking his mind. That's a bridge too far. Okay, I mean, this should be the easy part, right? I believe when the person, the two people in Minneapolis were killed, there was also a resolution, and every Republican was on board with it. There's no disagreement there. Like, when someone gets murdered, you could say, hey, we don't think they should get murdered for their speech. That should be really easy to do, honestly. I mean, we've had a lot of really crazy murders over the years when it comes to speech. Most of them date back a ways, but still, you look back at them, there's like, communist politicians and far left-wing, people who were murdered, and I don't cheer on any of that. Like, it's easy to say, hey, we should not do this. And apparently not so easy, though, if you're on the left. Now, the coverage was kind of strange. At Charlie Kirk Memorial, Trump rallies MAGA against political opponents. I mean, at some level, that's true. There were a couple speeches to that end. At Kirk's service, an extraordinary fusion of government and Christianity. You see what they're going for here. Is to give you this is Christian nationalism vibe. That's what they're trying to portray to you. Then you have how Donald Trump's approval rating has changed since Charlie Kirk's death. It's just a weird one. I don't know that, I mean, I guess they could be tied together. They were obviously close, but still it's a little bit strange. Trump will never change, but Kirk's death shines a path to MAGA's future, says CNN. Now, it's a little bit different than the coverage you got on The Blaze, just to give you a taste of that. Tens of thousands flock to Charlie Kirk's memorial as massive crowd forms at dawn. Second venue opened for Charlie Kirk Memorial as colossal crowd of supporters flow through the streets. I talked to Glenn today, who was at the memorial, as I mentioned, and he said not only was the Cardinal Stadium filled, a whole other arena nearby was filled, and there was lots of people, thousands and thousands of people walking away because they just couldn't get in. So they think 200,000 to 300,000 people may have been there, not to mention the tens of millions that were watching on TV and online. Now, of course, not everyone appreciated it all that much. Not everyone likes Charlie Kirk. And I guess, you know, you don't have to like Charlie Kirk to say, hey, this person should be honored. But Ilhan Omar is going very, very far. Ilhan Omar doubling down on her nasty Charlie Kirk comment, saying that legacy belongs in dustbin of history. You might say, well, is that taken out of context? I don't think so. Here, let me give you the context. This is Ilhan Omar on CNN.
This is someone who was a husband and a father. And in the days after his shocking death, that happened as a result of his views or happened as a result as he was sharing his views publicly with people, that people found it jarring to hear such criticism of that in the immediate aftermath.
I find jarring is that there are so many people willing to excuse the most reprehensible things that he said, that they agree with that, that they're willing to have monuments for him, that they want to create a day to honor him, and that they want to produce resolutions in the House of Congress honoring his life and legacy. It is one thing to care about his life, because obviously so many people loved him, including his children and wife. But I am not going to sit here and be judged for not wanting to honor any legacy this man has left behind. That should be in the dustbin of history, and we should hopefully move on and forget the hate that he spewed every single day.
That was Maroon 5 Extra Ilhan Omar there talking about Charlie Kirk as if she's accomplished anything, even in the realm of what he has. Just shocking. You know, it's stunning to see it, because you don't have to be that awful. Like, there's no law saying you have to be among the five worst people in America. You don't just because you've been there before doesn't mean you have to stay there. But I don't know. She wants to hold on to the title, I suppose. Now, of course, she's competing with others. AOC, she's condemning the ignorant rhetoric of Charlie Kirk in response to the House tribute. By the way, I should mention, none of this stuff is true. You know, like, a lot of the comments that they're sharing that Charlie Kirk actually said are either completely made up, like seemingly from maybe ChatGPT, but seemingly completely made up. And either that or just totally taken out of context. Like, you know, to the point of some of these clips that have been shared are Charlie Kirk quoting someone else while he was criticizing that person. And they're like, look, he said this. Well, yeah, he said it when he was quoting the person he was criticizing. I mean, they'll break any rule to stay on point here. Their point, of course, being we can't honor Charlie Kirk as a person because he said something I didn't like once. Now, of course, people say stuff that I don't like all the time. I still can be sad when they get killed. That's really easy to do for human beings. AOC not really falling into that category. She said this, we should be clear about who Charlie Kirk was. A man who believed that the Civil Rights Act granted black Americans the right to vote was a mistake. Who, after the violent attack on Paul Pelosi, claimed that some amazing patriot out there should bail out his assailant and accused Jews of controlling not just the colleges, it's the nonprofits, it's the movies, it's Hollywood, it's all of it. His rhetoric and beliefs were ignorant and sought to disenfranchise millions of Americans, far from working tirelessly to promote unity as asserted by the majority in this resolution. We can condemn his horrific assassination and the scourge of political violence without uplifting these ideas. Can you, though? I mean, he should be able to do that if you actually meant the first part, right? Like, I don't think there's any Democrat who liked Charlie Kirk's opinions. I think when you look at the, of course you can go and you can find the worst things that people say and say, oh gosh, you know, and let me extrapolate an entire false personality out of them. You know, that's what, of course, she's doing. And, you know, again, to be fair, she's got like 9 brain cells. They don't really see each other. They're kind of like, you know, around corners, so they can't really communicate. I get that I'm very low hanging fruit here when it comes to criticizing AOC, but it is endemic of what we're seeing on a lot of the left, especially online. And again, you know, you should think of someone like AOC as less of a congresswoman, but more of like an influencer, right? Like, she's not an actual, she's no serious person. By the way, there's some on the right that you could say the same stuff about, but like AOC, you can't look at her and think, oh, there's a congresswoman with a serious opinion. You kind of have to look at it more in that, influencer type of level. Hawking some, some bizarre product, or can't figure out where her, what a garbage disposal is. Like, there's, there's not a lot going on there. But still, I do think that there are a lot of people who feel that way. You know, you go to Media Matters and you take your three or four things you found on there in a 10-second search, and you kind of spout it out there and act like you have an idea of what you're talking about. Quite clearly, she doesn't. But again, she's kind of just like competing for this, dumbest person in public life sort of role. And I don't even know why she's bothering, because we have Jasmine Crockett already. She's already here. You can try really, really hard to compete with her, but she already exists. And so why not just let her be Jasmine? Because all these others are pretenders. They're fakers. The AOCs, the Ilhan Omars, they're jokes compared to her. Jasmine is there running the show. And here she is talking about, again, these people keep getting booked on the same network. I don't know if that has anything to do with this, but Jasmine Crockett not honoring Charlie on CNN.
A resolution that came before the House this past week honoring Charlie Kirk. And there were 58 Democrats who voted against it. You were one.
Yeah.
Why?
Absolutely. You know what? One of the things I do want to point out that's not been laid out that honestly hurts my heart.
This is going to be a smart point.
When I saw the no votes, there were only two Caucasians. For the most part, the only people that voted no were people of color.
Oh, no.
Because the rhetoric that Charlie Kirk continuously put out there was rhetoric that specifically targeted people of color.
Stop it. It
is unfortunate even our colleagues could not see how harmful his rhetoric was specifically to us. So if there was any way that I was going to honor somebody who decided that they were just going to negatively talk about me and proclaim that I was somehow involved in the great white replacement, I'm not honoring that kind of stuff.
Blatant lies. I mean, it's just incredible that even after a man is just shot in front of our eyes, they can't even bring themselves to say anything that's true. It is really fascinating. The discipline. They talk about message discipline a lot in politics. The discipline that they are so dedicated to stupidity and so dedicated to lying about people they don't like, people who want lower tax rates than them, people who don't want babies to be extinguished in the womb. Those horrible enemies of theirs, they will do anything. They're so dedicated, even the emotion of watching a bunch of murders won't stop them. It's really legitimately incredible. Now, I said I was going to start with the stuff that meant the least, and I have. I really have. This, I can give you that stuff all day long. And I know, because we're a conservative show, a lot of that, a lot of people like that stuff. I like it too, to be honest with you. I'm not like judging anyone who likes to mock Jasmine Crockett. But I will say, at times, I have that moment of thinking to myself, when I really stop and think about it, is that the most important thing? And I thought we had a nice eye-opening awakening this weekend from Erica Kirk, who did the more important stuff. She did the hard work this weekend that sometimes, honestly, it's hard to do for people. I a lot of times I don't want to do hard work. I like things being easy. I like picking on Jasmine Crockett and AOC because they're morons. That's not a difficult thing to do. It's not a high-minded thing to do. So let's go to something high-minded. Erica Kirk I can't even describe the poise of her in this moment. It is remarkable. You're thinking of, think about what she's just gone through. She said goodbye to her husband. He went out on a business trip. He never came home. I don't know. I haven't talked to her. She met with Glenn like about 20 minutes after I left from Arizona. So I did not get to actually talk to her and meet her. And I would say ask her these questions, but I wouldn't have asked her these questions because, frankly, I wouldn't want to put her in that position. But like, I don't know exactly how she found out, right? But like, think about that. She's going about her normal day, probably with her kids, and starts getting panicked messages. Maybe she was watching it live. I don't know. But what we do know is that there was a situation where her husband was just murdered in front of basically the entire nation. And a few days after that, she's in the studio that we were in last Wednesday, doing a speech and trying to address people and just trying to say, hey, the movement's still important and this needs to go on. And then she's asked to go and speak at the funeral, the memorial, if you will, of her husband in front of basically every power player in the in all of D.C. and all of conservative media, not to mention 100,000 people, a whole nother stadium filled, hundreds of millions of streams online. And she delivered one of the most incredible speeches I've ever seen. It was incredible poise and really, really important things. And one of the things she highlighted was how we, conservatives, people of faith, are not acting the same way that they have, the left, the media, the people acting after the George Floyd situation. We're not burning things down. Let me let her lay all of this out for you. Watch.
But most of all, God's mercy and God's love have been revealed to me these past 10 days. After Charlie's assassination, we didn't see violence. We didn't see rioting. We saw what my husband always prayed he would see in this country. We saw revival. This past week, we saw people open a Bible for the first time in a decade. We saw people pray for the first time since they were children. We saw people go to a church service for the first time in their entire lives. Charlie liked to journal. And I say this because he did it to remember important moments and sayings that affected him. And one of the things he wrote in his journal was this. Every time you make a decision, it puts a mark on your soul. To those of you out there who just made that decision and took the first step toward a spiritual life, I say thank you and welcome.
It was something that Charlie Kirk talked about often. I think it was the most important decision that you can make is a choice to pursue Christianity and the faith that he supported and followed so closely. And this is not just like a thing you say at a memorial service or even in a college debate. This is something very well supported throughout all the social sciences. Let me give you this from Ryan Burge, who's been on the show before. There's a finding in quantitative social science that needs to be said plainly. Religious people are happier than non-religious people. Sometimes the gaps are huge, too. Let me show you this graph. And I want to focus you on one part of it here. If we'd show the graph, please. Thank you. Here in the 1990s is Charlie's generation. The gap is 14 points between religious and non-religious people, 34 to 20. It is the largest gap of any generation, of any decade. People born in the 1990s, Charlie was 31, he was born in, I guess, 1994. That is the biggest gap between. Now, there's a gap in every single age group when it comes to happiness. Every single age group. Religious people are happier than non-religious people, but that biggest gap are the people who were born in the 1990s, the people that Charlie was trying to reach, the people that, between those that group and the group, which was an 8-point gap in the 2000s, those are the groups he was most focused on, younger voters, younger people that are entering into adult life. The people who not only made the decision to be religious, but also enter into marriage, we see the same types of numbers where the people who do those things are happier. And so it's not just about, your faith, which is certainly more important than even your happiness, but it affects your life in a positive way, too. And that's something that Charlie was very quick to point out. Let me give you one more. And this is probably the most important one of the entire speech from Erica Kirk, just an incredible moment of poise and a moment that acts as a shining light to the power of Christianity And the idea of just following the faith. Watch.
My husband, Charlie, he wanted to save young men just like the one who took his life. Young man, on the cross, our Savior said, Father, forgive them, for they not know what they do. That man, that young man, I forgive him. I forgive him because it was what Christ did and is what Charlie would do. The answer to hate is not hate. The answer we know from the gospel is love and always love. Love for our enemies and love for those who persecute us.
I mean, she's a shining light for the faith. And I will say that was one of the most amazing moments. I mean, I can't even imagine how many people saw that. I was thinking of the person, the typical person who's reading the New York Times and constantly hearing on MSNBC how evil Christians are. And then to see that we're not burning down cities because of this, that we're forgiving the murderer. What, I don't know that I would have had the power to do it. I don't think she would even claim to have it. I think she would say that it was divine intervention. But the fact that that is who Christians really are, certainly try to be, is something that I think will draw people to the faith. And honestly, that's what Charlie wanted more than anything else. So just an incredible moment and an incredible speech from Erica, who I will say Charlie is going to be very difficult to replace, but he's left his organization and his family in good hands. All right, let me tell you about Beam. Now, if you're waking up feeling groggy or dragging through the day or just stuck in a cycle of bad sleep, there's a better way, and it's Beam's Dream Powder, a healthy, science-backed nighttime blend that is designed to help you fall asleep, stay asleep, and wake up feeling refreshed. It's built right here in America by people who believe in hard work and integrity and results, exactly the kind of business that we should be supporting. I will say it also freaking tastes great. I know that's more of a base thing, but it is really, really good. It also is easy to use, and it's already delivered more than 17 million better nights of sleep for people that are done settling for mediocre sleep. When you sleep better, you live better. And the deal right now is they've got a situation going on, the ultimate Patriot discount, they're calling it. It's about 40% off. And if you try their best-selling Dream Powder and get up to 40% off for a limited time, you're going to really love it. You're going to get some good night's sleep. And I think you'll be back for more. It's shopbeam.com/stew. Use the code stew at checkout. Shopbeam.com/stew. Use the code stew. Get 40% off. Sleep better. Wake up stronger. And show up ready for your family, for your work, and your country. It's Beam. Shopbeam.com/stew. Promo code stew.
Dein altes Sofa zerfällt langsam. Und die Black-Friday-Angebote sind wirklich unschlagbar. Aber dein Gehalt kommt erst Anfang des Monats. Kein Problem, mit der PayPal-Bezahlung nach 30 Tagen. So hast du jetzt mehr Spielraum beim Bezahlen und der Betrag wird nach 30 Tagen automatisch und kostenlos von deinem Konto oder deiner Karte abgebucht. Alle Infos auf paypal.de/30 Tage. PayPal es. Vorbehaltlich Kreditwürdigkeitsprüfung verfügbar mit deutschem PayPal-Konto für Einkäufe zwischen 1 und 2.000 Euro.
I'm going to bring in Christian Toto, film critic and host of Hollywood in Toto, the podcast. And Christian, you had a great write-up on a couple of things I wanted to cover with you. Jimmy Kimmel, this has been kind of all the rage. It's the biggest deal in the world, apparently, that Jimmy Kimmel has been suspended from his show with pay, by the way. So, again, can I be suspended with pay for a while? You know, 6 months, I'd be fine with that. So he's, you know, the media is going crazy over this. They are certainly much more upset about Jimmy Kimmel being suspended with pay than they are Charlie Kirk being shot. That does not seem to really be all that much of interest. You point out a broadcast that I missed on with Megyn Kelly, where she drew attention to this story with Aaron Rodgers from a few months ago. And I had forgotten about this interaction, but Kimmel was on record almost talking about his own case here, his own suspension. Can you go over this?
Yeah, he talked about how Aaron Rodgers accused him of being on the Epstein list. And of course, there's nothing to back that up. There's no accusation. There's no evidence that Jimmy Kimmel was anywhere associated with Epstein. So it wasn't the right thing to do. And Kimmel just charged after Rodgers. And again, I think he was right. But in that whole conversation, he said, you know what? My monologues are fact-based, and I've got a team of people behind me who are making sure that only the best information is included here. And on the rare occasions I make a mistake, I will just apologize because that's the right thing. And of course, it's exactly what he didn't do this time. And the lie was much bigger and much nastier than anything about a silly thing from Aaron Rodgers. So he kind of hung himself up by his own words. And of course, that's been memory hole for the most part. But good on Megyn Kelly for bringing it to the surface.
Are you of the opinion, Christian, that Kimmel knew what he was saying was a lie? He had done the research. He knew he was wrong, was trying to manipulate the people. Or that he's just like not the brightest bulb and has just been reading a bunch of left-wing tweets and just thought that was true at the time?
Well, it's in a way, it's both, because I think B was the correct answer, because at the time there was a lot of chatter on the left that it was a MAGA person. So I think he and his staff probably had this very siloed newsfeed. That's all they read. That's all they see. That's all they know. So it's very possible that he just went with that and rolled with it. But since then, he must know, and he must have been told, that that was absolutely incorrect. So at that point, you say, okay, I screwed up. Let me go on the air the next night, which he did. He was on Tuesday night, the night after he said it. I mean, he could have done a mea culpa. And, you know, we are a forgiving nation. And if he came right out and was sincere and said, hey, I said something last night, it was wrong, I apologize, I got my facts wrong, won't happen again. First of all, we all just basically shrug and go on. And the people who hate Kimmel, and the people who love him, love him. And life marches on. It's what he should have done as a responsible broadcaster. He could be left of center. He could be far left, whatever you want to call him. Just do the right thing. He didn't, and he still won't. And I mean, according to reports, he just refuses to apologize, which is just staggering.
Yeah, it seems like the company came to him and said, hey, we need you to apologize, correct this. And he basically said, no, I want to double down on it. At least that's what the reporting says. We don't know for sure. If he were to do that, I agree with you. I think most people would just say, look, I mean, you know, he's a late night host. You know, he got something wrong. Yeah. It's not that big of a deal. It's that bizarre, almost like religious affliction where they're trying to constantly stay maniacally tied to this argument that they made. They can't admit it. And I don't know if you've seen this, but I'm talking to social media, media figures, left-wing politicians, anyone. Have you seen anyone who said, wow, the way I reacted to that, I looked in the mirror and I can't believe I'm that person. I need to stop and I need to change who I am. Have you seen any reaction like that?
I haven't. I genuinely hope that in a month, in a year, in 10 years, that the same people who did all these things have that, for lack of a better phrase, a come to Jesus moment where they realize, oh my gosh, I behave terribly just because of my ideology. I mean, I hope we can all look at our biases and say, okay, I did the wrong thing, or I was too much in a partisan mood to say the right thing. You know, Adam Carolla is great friends with Jimmy Kimmel. They've been friends for decades. And Adam keeps saying he's a good person. And I don't really have evidence of the contrary. And the fact that Adam and Jimmy have been friends forever, despite their differences, is a great sign. But you think that maybe someone like Adam would say, hey, Jimmy, really? You can do whatever you want and say whatever you want. You don't have to change your mind, but you did the wrong thing. Now do the right thing and have a real heartfelt apology. I mean, if there's any apology coming now, it's going to be the most insincere one as humanly possible. But that's the best we can hope for.
Yeah, I saw Adam's comments, and I thought they were really, really good. I mean, you know, he does have a relationship with this guy going back a bunch of years. I'm sure he's been very generous and kind to him personally. Yeah. The only evidence we have, though, of course, is the public-facing stuff, and he just doesn't seem to really care about getting any of this stuff right, which is really concerning, especially when you're talking about I'm not asking him to get a Manhattan Institute study on taxes right. I'm asking him to grieve, to mourn, or at the very least, be respectful to a young father who was just murdered, and that was too far. And you brought up another example of this, which was the opposite side of this coin. Rainn Wilson from The Office, played Dwight on The Office, came at it, I think, the way you'd want someone on the left to come at this. It gives you a little bit of hope, doesn't it?
A little bit. You know, I was really disheartened when I saw the Emmys from a few days ago, the telecast. No one mentioned Charlie Kirk. And listen, you didn't have to say, I believe in Charlie Kirk, what he was trying to do, what he was trying to say. But you knew it was a national tragedy. You knew you could strike an apolitical tone. And you know that actors commonly use these award shows as bully pulpits. And they just couldn't do it. So while good for Rainn Wilson for saying what he did and being human, it's just the exception to the rule. And the silence is deafening. Listen, you don't have to say, I agree with Charlie Kirk. I want to vote like Charlie Kirk. No, of course not. We all have different points of view. But it was really something that touched a lot of people. I mean, look at the outpouring of grief. I mean, everything about this was larger than life in the worst way. And, you know, getting back to Kimball briefly, this wasn't just a lie. It wasn't like, you know, President Trump said X and I said Y and I got it wrong. This was lying in such a cold, cruel fashion. That's why it registered. That's why I suspect many of the affiliates probably got an earful from their audiences and said, what's going on here? Why did he say that? And why won't he apologize? This is not a typical lie. And it certainly wasn't a joke. I mean, I give satirists all the rope they need to say what they want to say and to be outrageous and to be offensive. I get that. But this was a scripted monologue that was taped. Where are the people in that studio, in that company, in that whole Jimmy Kimmel Live universe? No one raised their hand and said, wait a minute, that's completely wrong. What are we doing? Mm. There was no one there to say that, or they were afraid to say it.
Yeah.
I don't know which is worse.
It's amazing. Just to button up the Rainn Wilson part, by the way, if you didn't catch his comments, he said he spoke to a couple of, let's say, liberal friends at an event, and they were like, you won't find me shedding any tears over Charlie Kirk. Yeah. He said it was a bit of a good riddance thing, and it's like, guys, no, we cannot think or talk that way. That is not okay. So I think a very appropriate response from Rainn Wilson. I want to do a little more on the Kimmel thing, though, because, you know, as a guy, Christian, my whole career has been broadcasting mostly over the airwaves. You know, we certainly have plenty of internet stuff as well, but it's, you know, a radio show broadcast over the airwaves and under the thumb of the FCC. And my entire career has been spent not really knowing day to day when the FCC is going to decide something I've said is wrong or inappropriate. And so when I look at this situation, while certainly the left has dug its own grave with this stuff, Jimmy Kimmel was wrong, should have just came out and apologized, and all the stuff we talked about is all true. Do you worry a little bit, though, about the FCC getting involved in situations like this? Not, because right now, obviously, the people in the government are more friendly to our points of view, but that's not always going to be the case.
Yeah, and, you know, with the FCC chair, Brendan Carr said shortly after this whole thing went down, it was rather provocative and I thought unnecessary. Yeah, I do worry about that. I mean, you know, it's the lack of real hard guardrails, which is really upsetting because it could be interpreted any which way. We just had an administration which was just gleeful in shutting down speech and winnowing what we can do and say. I mean, it couldn't be more obvious. And, you know, if Trump had lost in November, I think it would have been game on, honestly. And I think we really got lucky in that sense alone, among other senses, of course. So, yeah, you have to worry about that. You have to worry about the fact that it just feels so vague. And, you know, what Carr said does make sense. This is for the public good, the public airwaves. And what Jimmy Kimmel did was ran afoul of that, really. So I understand his point, but boy, I mean, slippery slopes, there you go. I mean, what if someone else comes in and said, well, that opinion is wrong? So I don't know what the answer is, abolishing the FCC. doesn't sound so bad to me, but I think maybe a reinterpretation or a look at what's going on. We don't want the fairness doctrine to come back where they kind of measure all these different opinions. This is on the left, this is on the right. We've got too much or too little. Just imagine what a nightmare that would be. I mean, that was the way it was for a while.
Yeah, you know, I think I've come to that view, you know, listening to this over the last couple of days. I think there's a two-prong approach for all of these issues because, mm-hmm. you know, we have a lot of things going on right now where the government is taking a more aggressive role, right? And I think that's a big reason why Trump was elected. I think a lot of people on the right said, you know, I'm sick of letting these guys get away with all this stuff. Let's use everything that we have to go after him. And I can understand that concept. I really can. However, I think what we should be doing is pairing these sorts of moves with an opportunity to defang these agencies. You know, National Review wrote an op-ed, abolish the FCC. I think there is a, like, if we could say, hey, we're going to do this thing with Jimmy Kimmel. By the way, at the same time, here's legislation to get rid of the FCC completely or completely defang the FCC from anything from its core needs. Like, I don't think the left would go along with that. I doubt they would work with us to dismantle this power. But at the very least, we can at least take a principled stand and say, hey, if we're going to have this really big government intrusion all the time with these three-letter agencies, we're going to use them the same way you do until it causes enough pain for you to want to run away from them. Or let's just go to that. Let's cut to the chase and let's just get rid of them right now. And people can say whatever they want.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea. It's a great start. It's sort of something that we should pursue. I like that sort of measured approach. And yes, our friends on the left would not go with it. But if we can get it through, I think that'd be wonderful. And by the way, the principled approach you mentioned, I can't stop thinking about this. The entire Hollywood community has been aghast about the Kimmel suspension. Free speech, free speech, free speech. Where have they been? Mm-hmm. They've been absent. They've been missing in action. They've been silent. The last 10 years, I mean, I could go on for half an hour about all the abuses against free speech, and they didn't say boo. They didn't say it because they were afraid of getting caught up in the whole woke nightmare. They were afraid because they couldn't pin it on a Trumpian figure. You know, they were afraid for many, many reasons, but spare me, just spare me. If you just come to the free speech bandwagon now, I'm sorry. You needed you a while ago and you were nowhere to be found.
Yeah, I mean, really, it's just so hard to have any sympathy for them whatsoever after what we've seen. And you go back and you read their comments after, you know, they're going out, they're putting people in prison for Hillary Clinton memes. They're taking everybody off of social media. The federal government is pressuring social media companies to pull down certain types of posts. These people were nowhere at all. People getting fired for making jokes, you know, in the Me Too era, the George Floyd aftermath, all of that. None of them had one word to say. And now that one of their mediocre guys that none of them can possibly even be watching because he's got terrible ratings, all that is going on. He gets suspended with pay, tens of millions of dollars of pay. And this is the crisis for free speech. It is really hard to garner the sympathy here, Christian. And
the best example is Pedro Pascal, a very talented actor. You know, he was working with Gina Carano, who got fired from Disney because she's had the wrong social media posts, even though they reflected the views of many, many people. Meanwhile, he put up a much more aggressive, nasty Nazi analogy on his own social media feed. And also, he's been kind of banging the drum about Jimmy Kimmel. He said nothing about Gina Carano. Nothing. They had a great working relationship, according to her.
Yeah, nothing at all. Unbelievable. By the way, I don't boycott anything. That's not my vibe, but I've got no interest in seeing this new Mandalorian movie because of this. I'm sorry. She was the best part of that show.
They just dropped the trailer. It is almost unwatchable. So
it looks terrible. It looks like it was like a bad half episode of the TV show. I don't know. It looks absolutely horrible. All right, Christian Toto, film critic and host of Hollywood and Toto, the podcast. Make sure to check it out. Christian, appreciate your time, and thanks so much for coming on the program.
Thank you.
Lust auf besonders feine Weihnachten? Erlebe einzigartigen Genuss mit Rewe Feine Welt. Diese Woche zum Beispiel Rewe Feine Welt Schweizer Käse Trüffeltraum mildwürzig, je 150 Gramm Packung, nur 3,49 Euro. Oder Rewe Feine Welt italienischer Prosciutto Crudo, roher Schinken, mit Meersalz behandelt, mindestens 18 Monate gereift, je 100 Gramm Packung nur 4,29 Euro. Festlich sparen mit Genuss. Rewe, dein Markt.
I mentioned noted dummy AOC earlier on the program. She's now eyeing a Senate or White House bid. Yes, she might be seeing a little bit more of AOC. Isn't that exciting? Now, it's interesting to read the actual analysis from Democrats quoted in this article. This is a Hill article by Amy Carnes. But it says some of the Democrats think that she'd have a window. They say to the extent that Bernie Sanders is not running again, she has an opportunity to take that mantle and the voters who have fervently supported him, not to mention the next generation of young voters. That being said, anyone who could tell you where the voters are in 2028 is lying. I think that's the most realistic presidential case for her, right? Become the new Bernie. And that will give you a decent percentage in the primary and make you competitive, probably, if you can handle it. Now, she is, again, compared to even Bernie Sanders, who's not the sharpest knife, she's an idiot. But anyway, there's one theory that after four more years of Trump, people might want to go back to normal. But there's also those who think the pendulum is going to swing all the way to the other side and they want a candidate to break the system. The latter theory works better for her candidacy. Other Democrats said she could win in the Senate, which I think is true. I think she could beat Chuck Schumer in a primary. But one Democrat said Schumer sees her coming an effing mile away, and he has relationships that go back decades. He will try this, and it, unlike when she was winning in the House against Joe Crowley, kind of a nobody politician there, and didn't really think it was a serious threat. Kind of like a Mom Donnie situation here where like everyone was like, no, he's not going to win. And then he won the primary and became a bigger deal. I don't think that's going to happen with Schumer. That being said, I think she can beat Schumer. I mean, Schumer's just, I don't think there's a lot of love for Schumer. I don't think he's effective. He's too old and, she can beat him in New York. So in one way, like I'd rather have her run for president because I don't think she can win a presidential election. I'm nervous about it, but I don't think she can win. I do think she could be in the Senate for a very, very long time. Looking at the Democrats in 2026, Donald Trump has made big gains with black voters. He won 15% of black voters in 2024. That was up from 8%. So that is something the Democrats are dealing with. And now Gen Z voter data showing a warning sign for Democrats. Gen Z appears to be charting a different political course than millennials. This is a new report from DDHQ. They say young white women remain consistent with historical norms at 47%. But young white men, as far as Democratic registration goes, have dropped from 49% to 29%. This is a big, big change. And in between the ages of 18 to 29 across the country, young women voting Democrat in a generic ballot 66 to 24. But young men, it was 48-42 Republicans, which is not supposed to happen, boys and girls. The entire Democratic apparatus is based on the fact they never lose any of these groups. So really, really dangerous. That being said, the overwhelming history tells us that Democrats should do pretty well in 2026, probably will at the very least take the House. So that's still the operating, that's the information I'm operating under until I see something convincing me of something different. But this is maybe the seeds of that difference. Moving is one of those things that always sounds like it'll probably be fairly simple until you're actually out in the middle of it. And, you're juggling paperwork and you get timing and contractors, inspectors and mortgage lenders and utility transfers and everything else that's going on. Even school enrollment's a big one. Every single part of it depends on whether or not you've got a good deal and a real estate agent that can be in your corner. That's where realestateagentsitrust.com comes in. It's a free service that connects you with top-rated agents in your area, people who are experienced, full-time professionals with a strong track record and a commitment to service. These aren't hobbyists or part-time dabblers. These are serious, vetted agents who know the market, who understand the priorities that you have, that take the time to actually get it right. Whether you're buying or selling a home, upsizing or downsizing, relocating, or just kind of testing the waters, this is the decision that deserves more than guesswork. Don't go with your, second cousin's best friend's former roommate. Go with someone who you actually trust, someone who's already been trusted by thousands and thousands of families across the country. It's free service, it's fast, and it just might save your sanity. It's realestateagentsitrust.com, realestateagentsitrust.com. It's a free service to you, realestateagentsitrust.com. Okay, so here's what happened. I haven't really followed this all that closely. I think the issue here is that it was with Candace Owens, the, of course, right-wing podcaster, who has been apparently saying things about Macron and his wife, the French president's wife, saying that maybe it's not a wife, maybe it's a husband. Now, I don't know exactly what how this all came about, frankly, but apparently the Macrons got wind of it and got very upset and have now sued Candace Owens about this. And now they are promising to offer scientific evidence to a U.S. court to prove Brigitte Macron is a woman, says the lawyer. Now, I don't, it's not something I want to tune in for, frankly. I don't know what it's going to be. And I got to say, looking at her, I mean, she doesn't look like a dude. Look at this picture. He's kind of looking at the president kind of sideways. I don't know. Doesn't look like a dude. But anyway, I suppose we're supposed to, we're going to have quite an adventure ahead of us.
Stiller, die Glocken nie klingen, als wenn du offline bist. Na, der ganze Weihnachtstrubel ist dir auch zu viel? Dann lehn dich ruhig mal zurück und atme tief ein und wieder aus. Erst dann alles andere. Psst, das war eine kurze Gesundheitsförderung der MKK, meine Krankenkasse. Mehr unter www.meine-krankenkasse.de.